Welcome to the HCI family of podcasts. We're your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We share our own original research, explore industry trends, and interview executives and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things leadership, HR, talent management, organizational development, and change management. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with the HCI family of podcasts. Kim Flannery Rye, welcome to the conversation today.
Thank you so much, John.
It is a pleasure to be with you. You're joining us from the Seattle area. I'm south of Salt Lake City in Utah. And today we're going to be talking about IDEA, inclusion equals diversity plus equity plus accessibility. A very, very important topic right now. It's an interesting time socially, politically, around these ideas and these principles and how they get manifest in society and communities and within our organizations. Despite the polarization that we see broadly in society, I think this continues to be an incredibly important topic and something we can't allow to lose, we can't allow ourselves to lose momentum on. So we're going to unpack this and explore this together today. As we get started, I wanted to share Kimfer's bio with everybody. Kimfer Flannery Rye is the founder and principal DEI and culture practitioner for Inclusion Equals, a social enterprise focused on the IDEA, inclusion equals diversity plus equity plus accessibility, to build culture from the inside out. She believes that to address systemic issues in the world, we must tackle the inequities within organizational systems. Kimfer is a seasoned professional with 20 plus years of experience in diverse backgrounds, from marketing to organizational development. She is also an adjunct professor teaching creativity and innovation for MBA students and has her MBA in executive leadership. She has spoken on local, national, and international stages, including the 2022 and 2023 World Economic Forum, on critical topics such as the importance of women on boards and what it means for women to have power, authority, and agency. Before we dive on in, for anything else you would like to add by way of your background or personal context, and then we'll dive on into the topic.
Yeah, thanks, John, and thanks for the warm welcome. I know it's always so weird when you're listing out all the things that are in your profile, and I always get a little shy. Not gonna lie about that. In addition to what you just talked about with my background, I actually am a creative. My background way back in the day, I have my BFA in fine arts and primarily in oil paintings was my main emphasis. So this creativity that I bring throughout my, I would say, business sense, I use design thinking because it is a human-centered design process in everything I do. And also, like talking about the World Economic Forum, I had the opportunity this year, 2024, to be on stage as well. And looking forward to being invited to Cannes Lions to continue to talk about DEI in creativity, AI, future of work. There's so much that's happening as well. So thanks.
Yeah, awesome. And it sounds like we are very much on the same page. I'm a professor, so I do consulting work and things like this podcast, but my main gig is I'm a full-time university professor. And I also, in addition to being a chair and professor in the organizational leadership department, I'm the academic director of our Center for Social Impact. And we're all about systems. We're all about equity-centered design thinking and applying systems mapping, systems thinking to trying to better understand and tackle the most complex, challenging issues that we see in society today. And this is one of them. This is one of the biggest challenges that we face.
Yeah. And, like you said, we are in absolutely a polarized scenario right now because of the fact that diversity, equity, and inclusion has become a political issue rather than just a human issue. And because of that, we're seeing a huge, I would say, swing back on the pendulum is probably the best way to look at it, especially in the U.S. and obviously global, where there's various things happening in the global stage. But in the U.S., as we know, that pendulum swung in the middle of the pandemic, especially when George Floyd's murder occurred, right? And that pendulum swung. So then there were all those DEI promises and commitments and all these things that were driven in that direction. Of course, anytime a pendulum swings really far, it swings the other way as well. And that's what we're seeing right now in not only in the political realm, in education, as we know, is getting throttled right now, right? And so it's a really interesting place to be in DEI. Absolutely.
Yeah, and Utah is one of those places where it's getting throttled in the higher education space right now. This legislative session has been brutal, and I find it so sad for a number of reasons. But really, at the core, everything that we're going to be talking about today is a human issue. It's not political. Well, at least I don't think it should be. I mean, it's just about treating people well, treating people with dignity and respect. And I think most everyone agrees on that premise that we should treat people well and treat people with dignity and respect. It's become so politicized that now we're outlawing words and like specific things that we say can't happen on university campuses and things like that, which is a bit insane in my mind, but it's the reality we're in, and we're gonna have to figure out how to navigate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the question that I get asked right now is, what is that conversation happening, either within my industry folks or what are the clients are asking? And the interesting thing that I find right now, so there's multi levels, right? So we've got the high level conversation that's happening, industry conversation that are happening, and then there's the day to day, because I work with organizations for organizational change. So once you get down to the organizations, obviously people are the ones that bring themselves to work. And so those conversations are following. However, the work conversations are a little different than at that high level conversation. So I think what's happening also is that we're in this polarized area where before, like I said, when the pendulum was in the other direction, we sort of forced organizations, forced people in a direction, in a lot of ways through guilt and shame and, peer pressure. And peer pressure is good if you truly want to be in that directionally, right? However, when you're forced to do anything, even if you might try to do it publicly, there is part of you that are always back there going like, right? And so what I'm noticing is that organizations that were already doing a lot of things in a very performative level because of the industry peer pressure that they were getting, they're using this current political scenario to be like, whoop, we don't have to do it. We're out, right? While the organizations that were already committed, they just didn't know how to do it, are saying like, you know what, we're going to double down. We're going to fight any kind of legislation that's coming at us, right? There's a lot of cease and desist letters that are coming out now for all kinds of things across the industries, right? And so that's been really fascinating to watch, to say who are the organizations that are saying, yes, we've got the stockholder values that we have to think about, customers or our clients or whoever it might be that are part of this ecosystem that they're in, and trying to make decisions that way, right? And so it's a really strange time to be in, but I'm also, these are the times when you have to show up. You have to show up, and sort of like your trueness kind of shows up even further, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And it is one of my frustrations in Utah right now because of the political landscape. In my personal background, my personal beliefs and values and biases, even around the DEI space and how important it is. Like, I have to admit that I'm not only frustrated with political leaders, but I'm frustrated with organizations who I feel like should be doing more to push back, to fight back. But I understand that's challenging, and I understand that it can be messy, and they're doing organizational leaders are doing a political calculus around what are the the potential fallout of them speaking up or pushing back or filing suit or whatever. So all of that, you know, that's really the context that we find ourselves in as we explore this topic. Let's really dig in and talk about this equation. So diversity plus equity plus accessibility equals inclusion. Pull that apart for us and describe why you feel like it works together that way.
In the DEI space, I mean, there's DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. I think that is the core. But people have probably heard of JEDI, justice, right, in there, or DEIB. There's all kinds of acronyms. Honestly, the acronyms are there just as reminders for all of us, just like my acronym, in some ways, is for a reminder, and it makes it easy. It's the ideal equation. It's the idea equation. And the reason why I have it that way is that accessibility gets left out in that conversation often. And so, however, like we know, inclusion and belonging is the result of all of these things. And so, because of that, that language comes up often. We also know when we're talking about equity, justice is like very strong in there. But there is something about accessibility, yes, is also part of inclusion, but that specifically is often left out in the conversation. So for me, I really wanted to bring that up. What's really nice now is that accessibility is being talked about way more than when I started my company over 6 years ago, right? So for me, it was a way to really heighten and highlight that part of it. And I mean accessibility in there's broad terms of accessibility, and then there's really narrow terms of accessibility. And because of my background, in addition to, like I said, all of my backgrounds, one of the areas that I have experience in, I was a vice president and executive creative director for a digital marketing agency here in Seattle that was acquired by Accenture. And we were a very data-driven organization in the full funnel looking at marketing. And with that meant digital platforms. We worked in digital platforms. And so early on, before even like Google forced you to do accessibility on your website and things like that, those were things we were looking at, from color correction. At that time, I think the language was really more about that, than really thinking about visual, right? So, from an accessibility perspective, when we're looking at a swath across the board, I'm looking at your digital platforms. Where are you? Are you making sure your tags are happening correctly? How is it showing up for those that cannot operate in the same way that we would consider when you're full able-bodied? In addition to that, I work with a lot of organizations that have events. It could be virtual events because of what happened with pandemic. Then you're talking about like captioning. Are you making sure that's happening? Are you making sure you're having interpreters? And then on top of that, it's not good enough to have ADA compliant buildings, but are you actually setting it up so that it makes it easy once people enter in those locations, right? So that's part of the reason why I pulled up accessibility and
Can I just
inclusion.
comment on that for a
Yeah.
second?
Absolutely.
Because that's a really, really important point. When we think about accessibility and accommodations and things like this, we often think about one of the first images that pops into people's mind is that handicap sign that has someone in a wheelchair, right? And so we think about ramps and we think about how you get into a building. And I'm really glad when organizations make sure that their buildings are ADA compliant so that people can get into the building. Once you get into the building, then what?
Oh,
And
yeah.
when you walk around, most place, I mean, it's hard when I'm an able-bodied person, you know, it's unless I'm really taking time to step back and try to really see it from the perspective of others who might have some sort of disability, it's hard for me to see it. But if you I challenge anyone who's listening or watching today, like take some time today and just like as you're walking around your building, do it with that in mind. Think about, like, what if I was on crutches? What if I was in a wheelchair? What if, and you can name off several things. What would you do? And it's really hard. Like, I think people experience challenges that most of us probably never even think about, just because we're like, oh, we're ADA compliant, check, and apply that now across the board to all these different types of accessibility that we talk about. And that's just like one of the most like easy on the forefront of people's mind examples, someone in a wheelchair. But there's so many different types of examples of accessibility. And if you want an inclusive environment, if you want a culture of belonging, one of the first things you need to do is make sure that you have a really accessible workplace. You need to make sure that your software is accessible, that everything that you do is about how to include others and make sure that you're not setting up extra barriers that make it harder for them to meet, to do the work, to collaborate, et cetera.
Yeah, and just to make sure, I know when people throw around acronyms, you're like, what is that? So just for those who are not as familiar with ADA compliance, that's the American with Disabilities Act that came out in 1990. Just more of a reference for the listeners. What's interesting is that oftentimes organizations will think of it as like, oh, more cost, these things that we have to do. But what you don't understand is that there is cost to not being inclusive for your employees, right? Meaning you can lose employees because of it. That's a cost. If you don't have an inclusive workplace, which includes things like accessibility and making sure that people have that belonging, think about like they will jump ship. And there is a cost. I think it's an average, and oh, you know what? I don't like to do that. When I don't have the specific data in front of me, I'm not going to say it. There is an average cost, and you can look it up, that has like every time you have employee turnover, a cost that is to a company. And then on top of that, when you have people, when you are not really thinking about diversity, equity, and inclusion integrated into your business, not this programmatic thing that's sitting over here on the side. We're talking about systems here, integration of systems. You have people that are distracted from their work, right? That is literally burning money that you are giving them as a salary because of that distraction, because of the things that is not making them feel optimal in the workplace, right? So there is a cost because everyone always says, like, what's the ROI? What is the return on investment doing our DEI? Well, one, what is the investment of being human focused? Right? There's
Yeah,
that
so I
right thing
mean,
to do, and then,
yeah, there's always the business case, and we want to be able to make the business case. We want to be able to talk about the ROI. That's important because it helps bring people along, even if maybe their mindset isn't in the same, place as ours. And we want to find common ground. So understanding the business case is really important. But lest we forget, there is a very clear human case to all of this, a very clear moral case to all of this. And we if we're committed to treating people with dignity and respect, then inclusion should be a natural component of that. If you have an exclusive space, without diversity and equity, without accessibility, that's not inclusion, that's not belonging. And there are negative human repercussions for that. And of course, that then also leads to negative organizational repercussions, and there are going to be costs associated with it. I'm thinking about, like, when I teach like an intro HR class and we talk about ADA, oftentimes I'll cite some big case law in the space, and inevitably, what organizations, when they get sued for not being ADA compliant, they always will point to how much of a burden it is in terms of cost and expense on the organization to become compliant. That is pretty much always the defense when that occurs, and sometimes the courts side with the organization, saying, "Yeah, that's an unreasonable, that's not a reasonable accommodation. That's an unreasonable expectation. It's too expensive, especially for smaller organizations." But a lot of times they come back and say, "No, actually, that's a completely reasonable thing." And though it would, it does represent some cost to the organization upfront, you also then have to look at what are the long-term benefits of this. And one, it's a classic one. It's a case from probably 20 years ago. But there was a case with Greyhound Bus Line. You may be familiar with this. And essentially, there was a class action suit against Greyhound because they had height requirements for bus drivers. And that seems reasonable. You got to be able to sit on the seat. You got to be able to reach the pedals. It's a safety thing. It's just you have physical requirements for firefighters and for pilots and for things like that. They think, okay, we'll have a height requirement for bus drivers. Disproportionately, what they found over time is that they weren't hiring many individuals of Asian descent who may have been a little bit shorter, or other individuals who were just a little bit shorter. And the suit was filed, and initially, the courts sided with Greyhound, saying, "Yeah, it's an unreasonable accommodation. It'd be really expensive to retrofit all of their buses to have raised pedal systems, etc." It got appealed and eventually got overturned. And eventually, Greyhound was required to change the hiring policy. It was required to install, a raised pedal system in the buses, because the reality is anyone who's shorter still can drive a bus just fine. It's just a matter of whether or not they can reach the pedals. And so ultimately, again, it's something that in the long run, in the short run, it might have felt burdensome on Greyhound. In the long run, it opened up their talent pool. Now they could hire a much wider range of individual. They're going to have less turnover issues, like you highlighted. There's a whole range of things that will can and did benefit Greyhound in the long run. And so, it, not to mention just like you could avoid court costs and other things like that, if you avoid those types of lawsuits. So let's be proactive about that. Let's like take a step back and really look at what are some of the things that may seem completely reasonable to us. It may seem like it's a completely reasonable argument for why we don't do something that's more inclusive, more, something that provides more accessibility. But take a step back and think about like what could this really mean for you, your organization as a brand, your organizational culture, how you attract and retain good talent, all of those issues. On top of hopefully, just the human case and the moral case of it all, and I think you'll find that usually it's going to be much better for you as an organization. It's going to be much better for your people.
Yeah, it's always amazing. People find money when they have to, right? When there's litigation, when all of that, but they didn't have the budget to do it from the front side, right? So
Yeah.
it's when it's forced, they will find it, obviously. So why not make sure that DEI is an integrated part of your budget process? What's fascinating also around DEI, like I said, oftentimes people think of it as a separated thing. It's this thing that sits over here. It's a program, it's a training, right? And the way that I approach DEI, and part of the reason why I talk about that in that equation of the ideal equation, is because I'm talking about culture. And as we know, I think this is a quote that we all know. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. And so when we talk about that, culture is a is an it's still sometimes people think about culture as like that, oh, it's that soft thing. But what I'm talking about culture is that within culture, there's three different areas, right, to make culture happen. There's your brand, which is not just external. Your brand is where your vision, mission, your values are defined, right? That's part of setting up your culture. That's the defining of your culture. Then you have your people. Your people are the ones who enact your culture for you. It's not good enough just having posters saying like our values are da 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 da. If you don't have the third thing, which is the policies and procedures in which that supports all the things that you're trying to define within your brand to make it happen so that the people can enact it. So those three, everyone loves a good Venn diagram. That's my Venn diagram. Those are the three areas when I go into organizations to look at their business effectiveness. Change management is part of that, which is when I'm integrating DEI into it. And it's again, it's beyond just like, oh, let's have these trainings, and trainings are good. There's two pathways that DEI happens, which is internal learning. And then from an org, I'm talking about from an organizational perspective. You can have all the internal learning and the ways in which you can be a better human. That doesn't mean necessarily you know how to operationalize that. So organizations need to understand how they within their systems make that change. So it's a constant parallel path in how to make those things happen within organizations. So there is the I would say more of the tactical, and this is why I call myself a practitioner. Try to make DEI practical within your organizations when I mean that in a day-to-day task-oriented ways, so that way you can have larger scalable strategy around your business beyond this whole idea of like, I need to be more woke, right? They're just trying to make me more woke. It's beyond that. It is really trying to help your organization and your businesses to have that strong ROI across the board.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kim Furr, this has just been a fantastic conversation. I note the time. I need to let you go here in just a minute. But before we wrap things up for today, I wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, and then give us a final word on the topic for today.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me at inclusionequals.com. That's the website. You can also find me on Instagram, or also at Inclusion Equals, making it easy. If you want to connect with me personally, you can find me on LinkedIn as Kiemfer Flannery Rye. Actually, if you put in Kiemfer, you can find me pretty much very quickly. And then also my Instagram handle, which is my Kimisms. Those are ways to connect with me. Like I said, the last thing that I will leave with you is that if I can have you think about DEI as something that is not a standalone over on the side, but integrated into who you are and what you do and how organizations can do it, that's what I would love for you to take back. Versus this whole idea of like, I just need to have a better conscience, right? There's ways in which DEI runs through the gamut.
Yeah, absolutely. Kiemfer, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Kiemfer can do for you. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and please join us again soon.